A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been reading about passenger-to-freight conversion. This process where aging passenger jets get a second life hauling cargo instead of people. He wants to know how the engineering actually works, which aircraft are getting these standardized conversion programs right now, and whether this is a parallel track to factory-built freighters, or a recognition that it just makes more economic sense to repurpose planes already in wide circulation. It's a great question, because the 747 is being retired faster than new dedicated freighters can replace it. And e-commerce demand isn't exactly slowing down.
It's the classic capacity crunch. Boeing's freighter lines are sold out through 2028. Airbus has a 3-year backlog on the A330F. You can't just will new wide-body freighters into existence. So the industry is taking the passenger planes nobody wants anymore and turning them into cargo haulers.
It's not some niche side hustle. Boeing projects over 2,800 freighter conversions in the next two decades. The narrow-body segment alone, 737s, A320 family, that's where the volume is. These are planes that carried vacationers to Orlando 10 years ago, and now they're flying Amazon packages between regional hubs at 3 in the morning.
Post-pandemic, airlines retired passenger fleets early. You've got over 1,000 737-800s parked or heading that way, plus more than 500 A320s. That's the feedstock. Meanwhile, e-commerce volume keeps climbing. Narrow-body production lines are constrained, and factory freighters can't scale fast enough. The conversion market is the bridge.
What actually happens when you turn a passenger jet into a cargo hauler? Because I think the mental model most people have is, you rip out the seats, roll some boxes in, and call it a day.
That's exactly the misconception we need to demolish. A passenger-to-freight conversion, P2F in the industry, is a certified engineering process. You need what's called a supplemental type certificate, an STC, from the FAA or EASA. That STC represents millions of dollars in engineering development, years of testing, and it covers everything from structural modifications to fire suppression to how the plane handles in flight with a completely different weight distribution.
It's a full regulatory approval for a fundamentally altered aircraft.
The companies that develop these STCs, places like IAI Bedeck in Israel, ST Engineering in Singapore, EFW in Germany, they're designing an entirely new configuration for an existing airframe. Each STC costs somewhere between $50 and $100 million to develop, and it takes 3 to 5 years per aircraft type.
Which explains why you don't see conversion programs for every single plane in the sky. The economics have to justify that upfront investment.
That's why the 737-800 is such a sweet spot. It's the most popular narrowbody ever built, there are thousands of them, and they're hitting that 15 to 25 year age where passenger airlines don't want them anymore, but they've still got plenty of structural life left. A used 737-800 costs around $10 to $15 million. The conversion adds another 4 to 6 million. So you're all in at 15 to 20 million versus a factory. New 737-800 BCF at roughly 40 million.
Half the price for a plane that can fly cargo for another 15 or 20 years. And the break-even is around 4 to 5 years of operation. After that, it's essentially a cash printing machine, assuming you keep it full. Which, in this market, isn't hard.
Let me make sure I've got the landscape straight. We've got factory-built freighters, the 777F, the 767-300F, the A330F. Those come off the production line as cargo aircraft, optimized from birth for pallets and containers. Then we've got converted freighters, same airframes, but they started life carrying passengers and got retrofitted later. Same plane, different production path.
That's the key distinction, and it matters for everything from payload to range to fuel efficiency. A converted freighter is never going to match a factory-built one on pure performance metrics. A 737-800 BCF carries about 23 tons of payload. A 777F carries 102 tons. Different beasts entirely. But that's not a flaw in the conversion. It's a feature. The converted narrowbody isn't trying to replace the 777F on trunk routes between Hong Kong and Anchorage. It's opening up routes that couldn't support a widebody freighter at all.
That's where we get into the knock-on effect, which is where this gets genuinely interesting. But before we go there, I want to walk through what actually happens to the aircraft during a conversion, because the engineering is wild.
Let's do it. What's step one?
Step one is the strip down. Every passenger amenity comes out. Seats, overhead bins, galleys, lavatories, interior panels, carpeting. You're left with basically an aluminum tube with a cockpit and wings. The weight savings alone from removing all that interior is substantial. We're talking several tons.
Which becomes payload capacity on the other side.
The real engineering starts with step two, the cargo door. You have to cut a massive hole in the fuselage, typically about 104 inches wide by 66 inches tall on a narrow body. The surrounding structure has to be completely reinforced. New frames, new stringers, new doublers around the opening, because you've just interrupted the load path that keeps the fuselage from turning into a soda can under pressure.
You're essentially redesigning a critical structural section of a pressurized tube at 35,000 feet. What could go wrong?
Which is exactly why the STC process takes years. Every reinforcement has to be analyzed, tested, and certified. Then there's the 9G rigid cargo barrier. That goes in at the forward bulkhead, right behind the cockpit. It's a solid wall designed to stop cargo from becoming a projectile if the plane decelerates hard. 9G's forward, which is the certification standard.
9G's being 9 times the force of gravity. So a 20-ton pallet effectively weighs 180 tons in that scenario. That barrier earns its pay on a bad day.
It's not optional. Without it, you don't get the STC. After the barrier, you install the floor grid. Passenger floors are designed for distributed weight, people in seats, aisle traffic. Cargo floors need to handle concentrated loads from pallets and containers, so you're putting in roller mats, ball panels, tie-down rings every few inches. The entire main deck becomes a giant loading system.
Which also means you're changing how weight distributes through the airframe. The center of gravity shifts depending on how cargo is loaded.
That's where the next system comes in, smoke detection and fire suppression. Passenger cabins have fairly basic smoke detection because there are flight attendants walking through. A cargo compartment is sealed, unoccupied, and full of who knows what. You need Class E cargo compartment certification, which means smoke detectors that can pinpoint a fire within 60 seconds, and a suppression system that can knock it down before it becomes catastrophic.
The environmental control system has to be reworked too. Passengers need fresh air at a certain temperature and humidity. Cargo doesn't care about comfort, but some freight. Pharmaceuticals, perishables, needs temperature control. So you're zoning the air distribution differently, often adding insulation blankets and modifying the bleed air routing.
All of that, start to finish, takes about 3 to 4 months per aircraft in the hangar. But the STC development, the engineering package that makes it repeatable, that's the 3 to 5 year upfront investment I mentioned. Once the STC is approved, the actual conversion becomes a production line. MRO shops can run multiple aircraft through simultaneously.
The STC is the intellectual property. The conversion itself is the manufacturing. And that's why companies like Aeronautical Engineers Incorporated, AEI, or IAI, BODIC guard their STC data like crown jewels. They spend $50 to $100 million developing it. Now they sell conversion slots to cargo operators and lessors. Lead times for a 737-800 BCF conversion are sitting at 18 to 24 months right now. You can't just show up with a plane and say, do it next week.
That's before we even get to the airframe itself. You need a donor plane with the right pedigree, low cycles, good maintenance records, no corrosion issues. Not every parked 737 is a candidate.
Which brings us to the specific programs. Boeing's own conversion, the 737-800 BCF, has over 200 orders. That's Boeing saying, we'll convert our own planes because the factory line can't keep up.
Airbus launched the A321P2F in 2020, with more than 50 delivered so far. That one's interesting because it carries about 27 tons versus the 737's 23. Those extra 4 tons matter on tight margin routes. The A330 P2F is in the mix too for wide-body routes where you don't need a factory, 777F.
You've got Boeing converting Boeings, Airbus converting Airbuses, and independent shops like AEI competing with both of them. AEI's 737-800SF program is a good case study. When they developed their STC, the first cargo door cut on a 737 fuselage was a high-stakes moment. You're putting a 104-by-66-inch hole in a pressure vessel that's flown millions of miles. The reinforcement design, the new frames, the doubler plates, the intercostal structure around the opening, that all had to be validated through finite element analysis and then physical fatigue testing.
Every conversion shop has its own approach to that reinforcement. AEI's doubler configuration isn't identical to Boeing's BCF design, even though the end result looks similar. Different engineering paths to the same regulatory approval. Each STC holder is essentially selling a proprietary recipe for the same dish. The operator chooses based on cost, lead time, and which STC gives them better payload range characteristics for their specific routes.
The 767-300 BDSF versus the factory 767-300F is the clearest comparison of how these two paths diverge. The factory version comes off the line with a cargo floor, a cargo door, and optimized systems from day one. The BDSF, Bedeck Special Freighter, gets all of that retrofitted at IAI's facility in Tel Aviv. The factory version typically has better fuel burn per ton mile because the structure was never compromised by passenger cutouts. But the converted version costs significantly less upfront, and for routes where the payload difference doesn't kill the economics, that lower acquisition cost wins.
The operator's calculus is basically, do I need every pound of payload and every nautical mile of range, or do I need a cheaper plane that does 85% of the job for 60% of the price? In this market, with e-commerce volumes what they are, that 85% solution is printing money.
That's the conversion itself. But the real story, the thing that's reshaping the industry, is what this flood of converted narrowbodies is doing to air cargo networks. And it starts with something that didn't exist 10 years ago, the converted freighter as an asset class.
Investment funds and leasing companies, AerCap, GE CAS, Carlisle Aviation, they're acquiring used A320s and 737s in bulk, lining up conversion slots, and then leasing the finished freighters to operators. The residual values are predictable because the conversion STC essentially standardizes the asset. A converted 737-800 freighter has a known market value, known operating costs, known maintenance profile. It's a financial instrument as much as an airplane.
Which is a complete inversion of how these airframes were valued 5 years ago. A 15-year-old passenger 737 was a depreciation headache. Now, it's a revenue-generating asset with another decade and a half of service life.
The knock-on effect is even bigger, though. These narrow-body freighters are redrawing the map of who gets air cargo service. Amazon Air is the clearest example. They built a fleet of over 87 37-800 conversions, and they're not flying them between major hubs like Memphis and Louisville. They're operating out of places like Stockton, California and Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Secondary markets that can never fill a 777F. You can't justify a 100-ton payload on a route where demand is maybe 15 or 20 tons a night. But a converted 737? That's the Goldilocks plane for regional e-commerce.
That's enabling what the industry is calling air cargo regionalization. Same-day and next-day delivery to smaller cities that used to rely on trucking from a distant hub. DHL is doing the same thing with A321 conversions in Europe. FedEx is expanding its feeder network with 737-800s. The converted narrowbody is the reason Wichita and Boise and Allentown are getting dedicated air freight service.
Which loops back to the feedstock question. The reason this is all happening now, at this scale, is the post-pandemic retirement wave. Over 1,000 737-800s parked or retired early. More than 500 A320s. That's enough donor airframes to feed conversion lines through 2035. And those airframes are young by historical standards. A 737-800 built in 2010 has plenty of cycles left. The conversion just redirects the second half of its life.
Here's the tension. These converted freighters are not a replacement for factory-built wide-bodies. A 737-800 BCF carries 23 tons. A 777F carries 102. They're playing different sports.
Daniel's question about whether this is a parallel track or competition. It's both. Factory freighters own the trunk routes. Hong Kong to Anchorage, Dubai to Frankfurt, Shanghai to Los Angeles. That's where you need the payload and the range. Converted narrow bodies feed the spokes. Regional distribution, last mile air networks.
The line is blurring. Wide-body conversions like the A330P2F and the upcoming 777BDSF, Boeing's 777-300ER conversion expected to enter service next year. Those are moving into trunk route territory. A converted A330 can carry 60 tons. That's not 102, but it's enough to compete on thinner long-haul routes where a factory 777F is overkill.
You've got a spectrum now. Factory 777F at the top end. Converted 777 and A330 in the middle. Converted 737 and A321 at the regional level. Three tiers, all growing simultaneously.
The A321P2F deserves a closer look because it's doing something no narrowbody conversion has done before, containerized loading. It can handle LD3 containers, the same ones widebodies use. That means an operator can fly an LD3 from Singapore to a regional hub on a 777, then transfer it directly to an A321 for the final leg to a secondary city. No repacking, no pallet breakdown. That's a game changer for cold chain and pharma logistics.
27 tons of payload, 2,300 nautical miles of range, and container compatibility. That's why operators are choosing it over the 737-800 BCF for routes where those extra 4 tons and 300 nautical miles matter. The 737-800 BCF carries 23 tons and has about 2,000 nautical miles of range. Lower acquisition cost, more conversion slots available, and a massive installed base of pilots and mechanics who know the airframe. Different tool for a slightly different job.
Where does all this leave someone who actually has to make decisions? Because the engineering is fascinating, but the actionable piece is what Daniel's really asking about underneath all of it.
The first thing, and this is urgent if you're running a cargo airline or an integrator, the window to secure conversion slots is narrowing fast. Lead times for a 737-800 BCF slot are sitting at 18 to 24 months. That's not getting shorter as demand piles up. If you're thinking about adding capacity in 2028, you need to be on the phone now, and not next quarter.
It's not just the slot. You need the feedstock, the donor airframe. Used 737-800s are still available at reasonable prices. But as more operators and lessors wake up to the conversion economics, those airframes aren't going to stay cheap. The ones with good maintenance records and low cycle counts are already getting snapped up. Lock in the plane, lock in the slot. The operator who hesitates is going to be stuck watching competitors take delivery while they're still shopping.
For investors, the story is even bigger. The conversion market is a $30+ billion opportunity over the next decade. And the play isn't just buying converted freighters. It's looking at who builds the infrastructure. ST Engineering in Singapore, IAI Bedeck in Israel, EFW in Dresden. These are the MRO providers developing the STCs and running the conversion lines. Their order books are filling up for years.
Then there are the lessors, AerCap, Geckos, Carlisle, who are building entire conversion portfolios. They're not waiting for operators to bring them planes. They're buying the feedstock themselves, booking the slots, and offering turnkey freighter leases. If you want exposure to air cargo growth without touching an airline balance sheet, that's the vehicle. The lessor model also de-risks the whole thing for operators. You lease 5 converted 737s, put them on regional routes, and if the market shifts, you hand them back. The lessor absorbs the residual value risk.
Which is exactly why the asset class has matured so quickly. Standardized STCs means standardized valuations. A converted 737-800 freighter is a known quantity. Banks can lend against it. Funds can model it. Insurers can price it. That's not a small thing for an industry that historically treated used aircraft like depreciating junk.
For the aviation enthusiast, or the person who just wants to know where to point their binoculars, there are two programs to watch closely. The A321 P2F is the first narrowbody conversion that handles LD3 containers natively. If that takes off, and it's showing every sign of doing so, it could fundamentally change how regional cargo hubs operate. No more breaking down pallets between wide-body and narrow-body flights.
Container compatibility across fleet types is one of those unsexy things that turns out to be worth billions. Cold chain pharmaceuticals, high-value electronics, anything where you don't want human hands touching the cargo between origin and destination. The A321 opens that up to secondary cities.
The other one to track is the 777 BDSF, Boeing's 777-300 ER conversion, expected to enter service next year. A converted 777 with 60-plus tons of payload, long range, and acquisition costs well below a factory 777F. If that program hits its performance targets, it reshuffles the middle of the market.
The middle is where the action is. The 777F owns the top, the 737 and A321 own the bottom, but that 60-ton payload band, long-haul routes that don't need 100 tons, that's been underserved. The 777 BDSF could fill that gap.
If you're tracking this as an enthusiast, watch the certification milestones on the BDSF program. First flight, STC issuance, first delivery to an operator. Those are the signals that the wide-body conversion market is about to heat up. And watch the A321 P2F order book. If a major integrator like DHL or FedEx places a big top-up order, that's confirmation. The containerized narrow-body model is working.
The practical takeaways are pretty clear. Operators, lock in your slots and feedstock now. Investors, look at the MRO providers and lessors building the conversion infrastructure. Enthusiasts, keep your eyes on the A321 P2F and the 777 BDSF. Those two programs are going to define the next phase of this market.
The through line in all of this is that the conversion market stopped being a niche salvage operation years ago. It's now the primary mechanism for adding freighter capacity, not the backup plan. The main event.
What I keep coming back to is where this goes once the current feedstock wave runs its course. The 737-800s and A320s are the obvious candidates right now. But what about the next generation? The A220, the Embraer E2 family. Those are the narrow bodies that'll be hitting midlife in 15 years. Is anyone even thinking about conversion programs for them?
The market is asking, but the feedstock isn't there yet. The A220 has a few hundred in service. The E2 is even smaller. You need thousands of airframes in circulation before the STC math works. Nobody's spending $50 million developing a conversion for a fleet of 200 planes. The return just isn't there.
It's a chicken and egg problem. The conversion programs won't appear until the installed base is big enough, but the installed base won't be big enough for another decade at least.
That's assuming those airframes even make good conversion candidates. The A220 is a clean sheet design. Composite wings, different structural philosophy, different systems architecture. Cutting a cargo door into a composite fuselage is not the same engineering problem as cutting one into aluminum. The load paths are completely different. The fatigue behavior is different. The repair procedures are different. Nobody's developed an STC for a composite narrowbody conversion yet.
The conversion industry might actually face a gap. The current aluminum narrowbodies, 737s, A320s, they'll be conversion feedstock through the mid-2030s. But after that, the next generation might not be as conversion-friendly, and the economics might not justify it anyway.
Which is why some people are already looking past pure conversion to something more radical. As battery technology improves, converted narrowbodies could be prime candidates for hybrid electric retrofits.
Because the cargo compartment is already empty of passengers. You've got a big aluminum tube with a reinforced floor, and you're not putting seats in it. That's real estate for battery backs.
The weight penalty of batteries is the biggest obstacle to electric aviation, but a cargo plane doesn't have the same payload sensitivity on every route. If you're flying 23 tons of e-commerce packages on a 737 and you trade 2 tons of payload for batteries that cut your fuel burn by 15 or 20% on the climb out and cruise, that math might actually work. Especially if carbon pricing keeps tightening.
You're not designing a new airframe from scratch. You're modifying one that already exists, with a known structural envelope and a known certification basis. It's the same logic as the P2F conversion itself. Take a depreciated asset, invest in a retrofit, extend its useful life with a new mission profile.
The hybrid electric cargo conversion is probably a 2030 story, not a 2020s one, but the engineering pathway is there. The cargo compartment is already sealed, already fire suppressed, already structurally reinforced. Adding battery modules and power management systems is a systems integration challenge, not a clean sheet aircraft design challenge.
The circular economy angle is what ties the whole thing together. A passenger jet flies people for 20 years, then it gets converted, flies cargo for another 15, then maybe it gets a hybrid retrofit and flies another decade. That's a 45-year service life for an aluminum tube that someone might otherwise have scrapped at year 20.
It's one of the cleanest examples of circular economy in heavy industry. You're not melting it down and recycling the aluminum. You're keeping the entire airframe in service, just changing what it does. The embedded energy from manufacturing isn't wasted. The maintenance infrastructure, the pilot type ratings, the parts supply chain, all of that keeps generating value.
The economics reinforce the environmental case, which is rare enough to be worth noticing. The operator saves millions versus buying new. The conversion shop keeps skilled aerospace workers employed. The cargo network gets capacity it desperately needs. The aluminum stays in the sky instead of in a scrapyard in Arizona.
Daniel's question, is this a parallel track or an economic necessity? I think the answer is that it started as a parallel track and became a necessity. The factory lines can't keep up, the feedstock is abundant, the demand is surging, and the engineering is mature. P2F conversion is the main event now, not the side hustle.
The question that'll keep me up, well, not up, I nap pretty well, but the question that'll linger is whether the next generation of aircraft gets the same second act, or whether we're living through a golden age of conversion that closes when the current aluminum fleet ages out.
That's the open question. And it's going to determine whether the air cargo networks we're building right now, the Stocktons and Allentowns and regional hubs, have a fleet to sustain them in 20 years, or whether they're riding a one-time wave of cheap converted airframes that won't repeat.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
Guyana's Ministry of Agriculture spent most of the 1960s promoting Demerara wild honey as a premium export, until a British entomologist visiting in 1968 identified the source as a feral European honeybee colony that had swarmed from a sugar estate apiary 2 decades earlier. The wild honey was just escaped, domestic bees eating the same cane field nectar as the estate hives.
The branding was the only wild thing about it.
Marketing wins again.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumentop, and thanks to Daniel for the question. If you want more deep dives into the hidden machinery that moves the world, find us at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.